This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Imagine turning everyday expenses into luxury family getaways without blowing your budget. In this episode, I'm talking with Devin Gimble, a points and miles powerhouse who transformed a demanding career in medicine into a thriving platform teaching business owners and high earners how to leverage reward for wealth building and unforgettable travel. From flying her family of four in Lufthansa first class to the Maldives, to breaking down the smartest ways to buy points for premium flights, Devin shares strategies that can elevate your travel and financial game. If you've ever wondered how to travel luxuriously without sacrificing your financial goals, this episode is for you.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. My name is DeAndre Koch, and today we have an incredible guest joining us. So Devin Gimble is a leading expert in the points and miles space. She's the host of the insanely popular Point Me to First Class podcast and a former practicing physician as well. And so Devin's built this reputation for helping people use travel rewards, not just for luxury getaways, but as a strategic tool for business owners to utilize, especially those in the medical field. And so I had the privilege to meet Devin in person last year at the Travel More conference, and our conversations were incredible. And so I couldn't be more excited for all of you to get to listen to the treasure trove of points and miles knowledge that is Devin Gimble. So Devin, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you so much. I will try to live up to that incredible introduction. I hope I don't disappoint everybody, but thank you for the invitation. I love having conversations with you about anything, but especially points and miles. And I am just so thrilled, so honored to be here with you today. So thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely, Devin. I'm so glad you could be here. So Devin, there's two to three things I want to cover with you today. So one is going to be that recent family trip to the Maldives that I knew you took, that you said was one of the most ambitious trips you've taken, getting four people across the world to the Maldives. So I want to hear about that. And then I know with you, I'm going to be able to do something I don't get to often do, which is to connect my financial advisor and financial planning hat to the world of points and miles and really talk through how travel rewards can kind of fit into a broader, you know, wealth building strategy. And if we have some time, we'll also want to get into your one of the things I know that you're really good at, which is buying points and when that makes sense for premium cabin flights, you know, so when to buy points on sale. So those are one of the things I want to kind of tease the listeners that we're ideally going to all cover all of these topics. But before we get into all of that, Devin, I know everyone's asked you this. How is it that a physician goes from practicing medicine to now being a points and miles expert? Please tell us, Devin. You got to tell us. There's got to be a story here.
Yeah. The short answer is by accident, because I don't think there are a lot of folks who, you know, go through the entire sort of educational timeline of becoming a physician, all of the education, all the training that's involved to say, great, I'm so glad I did that. Now I want to go teach about points and miles. You know, certainly that was not what I set out to do. A very, very kind of traditional background. I was one of those kids who grew up only ever wanting to be a doctor. And so for, you know, kind of like the vast majority of my life, that was the path, you know, very traditional. Like I said, you know, went to undergrad. I actually took off 2 years in between undergrad and med school where I did travel pretty extensively. But then after that, you know, did the med school thing, went into my postgraduate training, spent 4 years getting, you know, a residency, fellowship, 2 board certifications, came out the other end, was a grown-up doctor finally, and thought like, great, you know, this was the point. I'm going to join a medical practice. So I joined a small physician-owned practice in the Chicago area where I still live. And I thought, this is amazing. This is my forever job. You know, I'm going to now do this thing that I've been learning and training how to do basically my whole life until I'm 65, you know, be very traditional, work this full-time job, retire at 65, and then maybe do kind of the next thing. And as sometimes happens, you know, life doesn't always work according to the 65-year-old plan. And kind of long story short, one of the things that was really kind of, I think, instrumental about my story is that when I came out of medical training, like a lot of people, you know, I went to medical school entirely on student loan. So I had multiple 6 figures of student loan debt. I had been raised by a single mother in a, what I would call a not very financially resourced family. And so when I came out of all my training and my first grown-up job was finally making a paycheck for the first time, you know, in my early 30s, I knew nothing about personal finance. I knew nothing about how do I really responsibly and strategically manage money? How do I pay down my student loans? How do I save for retirement? What does that even look like? And I think it was a really challenging and scary time for me because I realized that, you know, when you grow up and you have no money, you don't have to make a lot of decisions around money because there just isn't anything there, you know? And for the first time in my life, I was in a position where I could see, wow, I may actually be able to have decisions in front of me about money that no one ever taught me about. And so for me, it started as, I just need to educate myself about personal finance. I got to figure out what the heck is going on here. And so I just kind of spent my spare time when I needed to take a break, you know, from the cases I was doing at work. I need, you know, 10 minutes to rest my brain. Let me read something online. I would just read personal finance blogs. And this was all the way back many, many years ago, you know, around 2012, 2013. And in the course of learning about personal finance, of course, as happens on the internet, you know, one thing leads to another. You find some links to something that's a little bit related. And I started falling into all of these personal travel blogs, you know, and points travel blogs. And at that time, again, there were a lot of really big travel blogs. This was pre-Instagram, pre-TikTok, pre kind of anything else. And that was like the educational platform of Points and Miles. And I am someone who always loved travel, had always done it as cheaply as possible, thought it'd be great to travel in a little bit more of a comfortable way, but didn't want to actually use my disposable income for travel. So, you know, at that point in my life, learning about Points and Miles was this perfect storm of right place, right time. And kind of the next thing that I think was really important for me is that, as I mentioned, you know, I was working in this private practice. So by training, by education, I'm a pathologist. We're the kind of doctors who make diagnoses on diseases. So if you, someone in your family, a loved one, you know, has ever had a biopsy taken, someone's got to look at that biopsy and make a diagnosis on it, right? So that's what we do as pathologists. And so I'm working in this small private practice, again, run and owned by 4 other physicians. And we would have monthly meetings where the partners would talk about everything about running the practice, but including financials, right? Like, what are our insurance payments looking like for cases that we've done? You know, what does the laboratory need in order to run? Because we had a full service laboratory. And, you know, there would be conversations like, well, we need to replace this piece of machinery, or we need to update this machinery, and it's $400,000, you know? And it was seriously like a light bulb moment sitting in these meetings where I'm learning about points and miles. I'm learning that you can turn expenses into points. And I'm in conversations where people are very nonchalantly talking about spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. And of course, that practice had no points earning credit cards. You know, I think the one business card was like a local credit union, you know, credit card that earned 0 rewards. And the gap was just so obvious to me, right? Wow, here's an amazing opportunity, and it is not being tapped into at all. And about a year later, my husband, who's also a physician, he became self-employed. He decided to go out on his own and start his own practice. And I knew right away, I was like, I don't care what you do. We are getting business credit cards and we are earning points for every single one of your expenses, right? So it was this like perfect culmination of applying something in my personal life that I had learned about and seeing the opportunity, right? Like seeing the opportunity for me, for my husband and I as, you know, dual income earners and dual spenders, him as a business owner. And for many, many years, it was just a personal hobby and it was great. And I got to do so many great and fun things about it. But then what happened was I actually decided to leave the medical practice that I was in towards the end of 2019, which was kind of a very random and coincidental decision because I ended up staying home for most of 2020. You know, as everyone knows, there was the pandemic. My two children were very young at the time. All of our childcare completely collapsed, you know, because of the pandemic. And so I was at home with them. And when they went back to school, I was starting to feel like, great, what am I going to do with my brain? You know, I'm really used to being very intellectually stimulated. I love being challenged. I wasn't sure I was going to step back into, you know, traditional kind of medical role. And I was thinking, you know, I know two things. You know, I'm like 30 something years old and I know two things and that's it. I know how to diagnose skin diseases. That was my area of subspecialty. And I know how to travel with points and miles and that's it. And if I'm not going to practice medicine, maybe I should spend a little bit of time teaching my community, you know, my physician community, folks who own small businesses, people I know who are in amazing position to earn points, but know nothing about this whole world. Maybe I should teach them how to do this. And that's kind of how it happened. You know, it was this very kind of organic step-by-step process. And it was really seeing how much this has, you know, this hobby had dramatically impacted my life. And I think for all of us who love points and miles, it's because this isn't just a little bit of a change, right? I think we've all experienced something through points and miles that we never thought was possible or was so enormously out of range of what we ever, you know, imagined for ourselves. And we love sharing that. And again, when I looked at my community, my colleagues, I was like, this is such a no-brainer. You're in such an amazing position to earn so many points so easily. Like, let me teach you how to do it. And it just became a huge passion of mine to take it just outside of my own home, you know, and to share it with people who I knew could benefit from it.
And it's absolutely incredible because I know you started that endeavor just a few years ago. And to give some scope for the listeners, right? Again, I said your show is insanely popular. It is. It's very good. I'm a listener. I love it.
Thank you.
But also the same thing, right? You have a very specialized niche, right? Your niche is women physicians in points and miles. And most people will think, well, how many are really in that niche, that scope? Devin, your Facebook group has 27,000 people.
Yeah, it does. It's great.
It's more specifically 27,000 women physicians. Like, that is absolutely wild. So you're doing something incredible. So obviously I say all that because I want the listeners to know the scope of level of expertise that you bring to the table. And so that's a perfect segue in. You did a trip that you said stretched your own limit of knowledge of points and miles and strategy. And you went to a place that Tara and I were just at a year ago. I think you were probably there almost to the day, probably a year after we were. And that's the Park Hyatt in the Maldives. So I want you to talk through your lens. The listeners have heard me talk about it, but your lens of what was your experience like there? But before we get to the there, what was your experience like getting there?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was the most ambitious trip that I have ever tried to plan for points and miles. And I'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, I mentioned I've kind of been doing this hobby for over 10 years now. And for a long time, I was using it predominantly for solo travel. I learned about this before I even had my kids. I was traveling a lot in the context of work, traveling internationally for medical conferences or traveling solo, just because it's such a huge passion of mine. And I think the way that using points kind of works and the skills you need to have if you're traveling predominantly solo, especially if you have some time flexibility, is so different than when you're trying to travel with a group. You know, now my family has four people in it. When you are traveling during a very constrained period of time, you know, my kids are in a traditional school, so they have traditional school breaks. My husband, like I mentioned, he's a self-employed physician. So for us, my kids' winter break is really like the two-week period we have every year where we can really go somewhere as a family and all have that time off. It also happens to be the time of year that millions of other people have off and are also trying to travel, you know? So when I talk about the challenges of, you know, booking this trip, we're booking for a family of four during a very, very in-demand travel period. And also, and I will throw this out there, is that, you know, if I'm going to travel somewhere that's very far now, for me, if I'm going to be on a flight that's over 6 hours long, I have a very, very high priority for flying business class where I at least have a lie flat seat. All the other stuff is extra, But for me, in terms of my body and what it feels like after 12 hours, you know, in an economy seat, I now kind of in the place of my life where like I will preferentially use all my points to travel more comfortably. And so I was also looking for how do I get four people from Chicago, which is where we're based, to the Maldives, not only in business class, which is, like I said, a very different challenge than if you're trying to get one or maybe even two people somewhere in business class. But the other thing that was also a priority for me, based on my kids' ages, I have a little one who just turned 6 and my older one just turned 9. I knew there's no such thing as a direct flight, right, from Chicago to Mali. Doesn't exist. That's fine. But knowing that even once you land in Mali, there's still transport, right? There's still at least one flight, if not one flight plus a speedboat ride. I really did not want to have more than 2 long haul flights to get from Chicago to Mali. And so that was also somewhat limiting in that, you know, I did not approach this search like anything, any flight that gets me from A to B, you know, is open. It was like, no, it has to be in a very tight time window. It's got to be 2 international flights from Chicago somewhere to Mali. And it's got to have business class for 4, right? I mean, that's a pretty tall order. Luckily, I have a lot of experience in points and miles. And I also have a very diversified points and miles portfolio. And I think that that really comes into play is as you know, are in this hobby longer and longer, really learning what are some of the strengths of the different points currencies, because there is no such thing as the one perfect credit card, the one perfect points currency, right? And knowing how can you really leverage the sweet spots of some of these currencies can come into play. And so in terms of planning, the way that I constructed this, again, is maybe not going to be something that very, very beginners want to try, but I'm like, if you're ambitious, go ahead and try. In terms of getting from Chicago to Mali, you know, you can kind of count on one hand, what are some of the airlines that, you know, you think would run that ultimate route? You know, it's probably going to be some of your major Middle Eastern airlines, you know, Emirates, Etihad, Qatar, you know, maybe some of your major kind of European based airlines, like, you know, British Airways, something like that. But there's not a ton of airlines, right? And I think one of the biggest challenges I had is that as much as I am comfortable doing award searches, and I feel like I know the different airlines really, really well, there was no single airline where I could book us, you know, Chicago through a hub and then on to Mali for 4 people in business class, you know, for what I consider to be a reasonable amount of points, you know, not like 1.9 million points per person, which even I'm not going to pay, right? And so for us strategically, what worked really, really well was to actually break this up. And so the way that we ended up booking this was that I have a lot of miles in a niche program called Lufthansa Miles and More. We might get into later in the episode kind of why I love this program, how I end up with so many miles in here when it's not a transfer partner of any of the major transferable points currencies. But one of the things I love about Lufthansa Miles and More is they have incredible premium cabin award space on their flights, especially on the main airlines in their partnership, which are Lufthansa, Austrian, and Swiss. And so I booked us initially from Chicago to Frankfurt on Lufthansa in business class. They had great award availability, easy to find 4 seats. And then that allowed us a really long layover in Frankfurt where we actually had a day hotel. So everyone in the family, like we could go to a hotel, you know, attached to the Frankfurt airport, lie down in a real bed, you know, actually have that like rest experience before then continuing on for the Frankfurt to Mali leg, which interestingly, Lufthansa doesn't fly. That was part of the challenge. If I could have booked us entirely on Lufthansa, I would have, but they don't fly that leg. But there's another European airline called Condor that operates a nonstop flight from Frankfurt to Mali. And this is where I think the dynamicness of points and miles is so much fun that you can book Condor through Alaska Airlines. But I, despite being in this hobby for 10 years, never really had a lot of Alaska Airlines miles until literally the last 6 months when Alaska and Hawaiian combined. And all of a sudden now you could tap into Alaska's program by transferring Amex points to Alaska via Hawaiian. And so that's what I did. I booked just 4 business class flights from Frankfurt to Mali on Condor. And then I had essentially kind of reverse engineered our return. So I ended up booking us 4 one-way flight segments internationally. But the really, really fun part is that when we were in Mali airport for our returns, we were already headed home. We were going to do the same thing, fly Condor from Mali to Frankfurt, spend an entire night in Frankfurt so my kids could kind of adjust, and then fly home the next day, business class Lufthansa from Frankfurt to Chicago. we had a couple hours in the Malé airport where, you know, before our flight. And so I was just looking through Lufthansa, and I don't know why, but I just thought, well, let me just see if on the flight that we're flying home, if there's award availability for four of us in first class, because Lufthansa first class is an experience. It was actually my very, very first award booking I ever made for myself over 10 years ago. It's an incredible experience, especially if you're departing from Frankfurt, because they have an entirely separate terminal you get to use as a first class flyer. And I just remember thinking, this could be kind of like a once in a lifetime experience, especially for my kids. You know, there's not a lot of airlines that release four first class awards that you can book on one flight. And I wasn't going to split us up. I wasn't going to do the 1 and 3 thing or the 2 and 2 in first and business class. And lo and behold, there were actually 6 first class awards available to book on the Lufthansa flight from Frankfurt returning to Chicago. And so I told my husband, but we didn't tell our kids, that I actually canceled our business class flight. And then I booked us on first class instead. So we got to have that whole experience as a family, which was just remarkable. So, you know, I think it was really the flights that made this a challenge for me. To book 1 week at the Park Hyatt Maldives where we stayed on points is very straightforward. Exactly like you would book any other Hyatt stay. I think the simplicity is why so many of us love Hyatt. The value is why we love it. But it was the flights themselves, like based on all the parameters and constraints that we have, that were, you know, more challenging than booking the hotel. But it was so amazing. I mean, the flights themselves were great. It was such a comfortable way to travel so far, especially with young kids and trying to take into account, you know, how are they going to tolerate this? You know, there's a lot I can put up with that I'm willing to put up with, especially when, you know, airlines are involved. But I wasn't sure, you know, how's a 6-year-old going to do? But it was just an amazing, amazing experience for our family.
And we've mentioned this in our most recent episode when we talked about our most recent Maldives trip, but I'm actually curious, talking through kind of your process of making sure your family, especially your kids, right, they have this comfort as they are getting to this super far destination, and you had the hotel stay in Frankfurt, all those different things. I'm actually curious, how did they fare with the chaos that is the Malé airport?
You know what's fascinating? It didn't feel like chaos to me. It didn't. I mean, to me personally, I've traveled so many places in the world that it didn't even occur to me that it was chaotic. But here's what I think is also great for listeners to know, especially if you want to plan, you know, family travel, or you have littler ones with you who, again, may not just yet have the emotional like resilience and capacity, you know, of you know, a fully grown person, is that I don't know how it is if you book through other resorts. This was my first time to the Maldives, but I have to say that I think this is something that the Park Hyatt did so extremely well, which was that when we landed in the Maldives, when we were first coming in, we didn't check bags. So we did carry-on only, which I highly recommend. It made the trip so easy and streamlined. So we, you know, moved through passport control in the Malé airport. And then once you go past baggage claim, you kind of come out into the more public area of the airport. There was a representative from the Park Hyatt, you know, holding a sign that said Park Hyatt on it. We'd received information, you know, to look for this representative. And essentially my experience, again, as someone who's traveled solo, traveled in all sorts of places in the world without the wonder of having someone like hold my hand through any of the situations, is I literally felt like once we connected with our Park Hyatt representative, we did not have to think about anything. It was really nice. I mean, especially after, you know, 40 hours of travel, you know, my husband and I are making sure that, you know, our kids aren't getting lost or anything like that. We don't have to think about anything else. He walks us from the international terminal to the domestic terminal, because the next leg was you have to fly a domestic flight. And he walks us into the domestic terminal. We didn't even have to go up to the check-in counter to get our boarding passes for our flight. He said, hand me your passports. You know, I'm going to check in for you, but first let me take you to a place where you can, you know, relax. It's a little more comfortable. There's a perfectly nice domestic lounge in the domestic terminal of the Malé airport. You know, it's air conditioned. It's got great bathrooms. It's got some snacks. But he said, you just rest here. I'm going to take care of everything. If we had bags to check, he would have checked them in for us, but we didn't have them. But he said, I'm going to take care of your boarding passes. I will come back here when you need to board the flight. Don't worry about anything. And it was kind of that level of care was really, really amazing. It was just, we didn't have to then do that mental lifting of trying to keep track of where we're supposed to be, how are we supposed to get there. And he, you know, came back with our boarding passes and walked us exactly where we were supposed to go. We get on it was a 1-hour domestic flight from Malé to Kudu. And even when you get off the flight in Kudu, again, a representative is right there and you don't have to think, you just follow. So as long as you can follow someone with a sign who's going to take great care of you, you're going to have a wonderful time. And I think, again, as someone who is perfectly capable of navigating international airports, I'm not intimidated by that. The fact that after such a long travel, I didn't have to worry about any more navigation and I could just kind of pay attention to my kids being comfortable and not losing them. It was just a lovely service.
So I love that you said that. And that's also making me realize what I missed out on. And the reason why I say that is because we got about 80% of what you just said. The 20% was 100% my own fault. The 20% that we missed out on. So we were there for a solid almost 2 weeks already in Maldives. And so we had just gotten off of our scuba spa. This was, you know, two trips ago. And we knew there was a representative that was going to be looking for us in the airport because that was still the meeting point, but I couldn't find him. So I was like, oh, well, the domestic air terminal is right here. And that lounge that's in domestic is actually priority pass lounge. So we were planning on going there anyway. So we went and, but the thing is we waited in line, we did the check-in. And then the way that it works there is there was a whole system. I won't, for sake of time, I won't go into it, but basically like after we checked in, they're like, well, you have to actually go to this kiosk over there, wait in line to pay for your baggage. So I had to go and pay for the baggage, but then all the ATMs were down, their systems were down. So we had to actually find US cash to pay. This whole process that happened, and the reason why I realized I missed out on that is one of our bags arrived late, but they already knew that. They figured that it was going to happen, I guess, a wait thing with the plane. When we got to the Park Hyatt, they're like, hey, our representative was waiting for you. They're ready to do this. They're ready to do that. All these different things. So I realized 100% on my own, kind of similar to you, right? I don't need someone to walk me through an airport. I got this. No, they would have hooked it up. So you did what I didn't do. So I'm envious of that. So before we move on here, real quick, Devin, at a super high level, what was your experience at the Park Hyatt?
You know, it was really incredible. I'm a huge fan of the kind of the Park Hyatt brand in general. They're one of my favorite sort of properties within the Hyatt brand. And so I've stayed at several of them. I've stayed at other Hyatt brands. I think what was so special about this property, there's so much about it. I mean, being on an island where the entire island is just the property that you are on is unbelievably amazing. But I think despite the fact that I've stayed in a lot of different properties around the world, personally, I have never experienced kind of the level of attentiveness that I did at that property. And I'm not talking just about me and my husband. You know, I think if you travel as a partnership, or if you travel solo and maybe you don't have children or you haven't traveled with children, it's a very, very different experience. And I've been a lot of places where I feel like either families are not welcome as a unit, or if you do travel as a family, kind of the parents get acknowledged as human beings, but the kids kind of get ignored, you know? And that was not my experience here at all. I would not call this a kids resort. I mean, there's only 50 villas to begin with, you know, so it's like, I don't think they can market themselves that way, but they were so attentive to us as a family. They were so attentive to my kids without being overbearing or obnoxious. And I'll just give you a couple of different examples. We were in the level of room there that's on the beach. So it's not one of the overwater bungalows. It's a beach bungalow, but a beach villa, but it had a private pool. And my kids love a pool. I mean, they will swim, you know, all day long. It's one of the reasons that we were so in love with this property. And also we're in the Maldives. Like, we did not come, you know, carrying a bunch of stuff with us. And the second day we were there, all of the villas have an assigned person from the resort to kind of take care of you, liaise with you, you know, help you around. And he noticed, you know, we have kids, they like to play in the pool. And without, you know, talking to us or making a big deal about it, they had dropped off just this huge bag of like pool and beach toys on the deck of our villa, you know, just something more for our kids to play with. And it was just that type of attention, you know, where if there was something that they thought they could do to enhance your stay, it just kind of showed up, right? There was nothing flashy about it. Again, there was nothing overbearing about them trying to take care of you, but it felt like they noticed, right? They would notice the types of things, you know, people tend to have patterns, you know, we certainly do, like we have our routines even on vacation, and they would just take care of that. And I thought, for it not being billed as, you know, like a kid destination, a kid resort, they were really, really great with kids. And I think that matters, you know, to people who are traveling with their families. And so, you know, if your kids are up for it, if you're up for it in terms of as long as it takes to get there, you know, I would really, really recommend this property for people who are traveling solo, with partners, or, you know, with families.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd argue that the beach villa, because we stayed in the same, I'd argue that is the best villa.
I loved it.
They were fantastic. I think I remember when I posted in one of the travel groups, like, oh man, you know, scored the high. This was, you know, a couple of years ago. They're like, ah, it's not an overwater. There, I mean, the overwaters are nice, don't get me wrong, but the beach villas are gorgeous. The location, the privacy is amazing. And I will say the one thing that stands out about that stay, as you mentioned, is on the daily, I don't think I've ever been asked so many times, how can we elevate your stay? Right? From the general manager, from the food and beverage manager, from all these individuals. You know, I thought at first, maybe this is just like going there with the globalist perk that allowed that. But at the same time, it just seems like that's just what they deliver.
No, and I want to give another example, and this is not like a glamorous example, but I think this is what happens real life when we travel. So we had mentioned that, you know, to even get to the resort, once you've landed in Maldives, to specifically get to the Park Hyatt Maldives, you take a 1-hour domestic flight from Malé Airport to Kudu Airport. Then you get on a speedboat, and it's supposed to be around a 35-minute speedboat transfer from Kudu till you get to the actual island. Now, I am someone who unfortunately have a long history of getting motion sick. This is not new to me. I've tried all sorts of different, you know, things. I usually just don't go on boats because I tend to get so sick on them, but there was no option, no other option for this resort. I knew there was going to be a boat, right? So I prepared. I mean, I had prescription medication. I had all the things. And of course, as sometimes happens, you know, in travel, we ended up landing on a day that was pretty stormy. The boat ride from Kudu to the island was horrible. I mean, it was so choppy. I knew immediately, I was like, there's no way I'm not going to get sick on this boat. And that's just kind of what happens. But I got incredibly sick. Like, I got so sick, I could not walk off the boat when we got there. And I know it's motion sickness. I know it will pass even when it's that horrible. I wasn't worried it was something more serious, but that was probably the worst I've ever felt in my whole life from motion sickness. But they, again, did such a great job taking care of us. Usually when you arrive at the resort, you arrive to this like gorgeous pier, you know, and the sky is blue and the water's blue and there's this whole welcoming party and, you know, they have these coconuts that you can drink out of and they welcome you. No, with my family, it's storming. They literally carry me off the boat, right? Like, I feel like I'm about to die. We don't do any of that like glamorous, picture perfect, you know, welcome to the Maldives thing. They drive us, you know, in the golf cart to our villa. I literally laid on the floor of our villa for 4 hours. They have a physician, thank God, on site. Amazing physician, amazing nurse come. They hook me up to an IV. You know, I get IV rehydration for 4 hours. They took such good care of me. And also all of the things that we kind of missed because we didn't have that traditional kind of idyllic arrival on this island, I still feel like they tried to make it up to us, right? Like, they still delivered kind of our welcome coconuts to our room. They still tried to create like a welcoming experience for us. And, you know, their physician and their nursing staff were fantastic. They checked in with me every single day, you know, to say like, how are you feeling? How can we make sure that, you know, you feel better on the return trip home? And, you know, I'm a physician. I have a background in medicine. You know, I can text a lot of different people if I need, you know, medical advice. And there is something really different also about being on a property where, you know, they have that as a resource. And you are kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I felt so taken care of, you know, by their staff, which I hope no one ever has to meet the on-resort physician staff, you know, for anywhere they're ever going. But, you know, I did just want to point out that this is a reality of travel. Like, even when you're in paradise, sometimes things happen. And, you know, I feel like they took just such good care of me and good care of my family as a staff. And that is something that I don't think you can really underestimate. And I think that helps to make such a memorable impression where I would never hesitate to recommend that resort, you know, to anybody based on the way we were just treated so well.
Absolutely. Well, what I love is the fact that that proves the consistency, right? You know, we went a year apart and we both got a really elevated experience, which is absolutely amazing. Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. DeAndre here, and I just wanted to interrupt briefly to remind you of two things. First, be sure to sign up for our newsletter where we give you direct access to travel updates, news you'll want to jump on in the points and miles world, and our continuously updated card offers to maximize your travel rewards, often before they're ever mentioned in the show. Also, if you didn't already know, we have a private Facebook group where we share news as it breaks, ideas, and other things that don't make it into the newsletter or show many times. And that's the best place to get your points and miles question answered directly by me and other travel enthusiasts. Both of these links will be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. So, Devin, I want to pivot a little bit here and get the opportunity to wear a little bit of my financial advisor hat, which I rarely do on the show. And my disclaimer, of course, is I'm not giving financial, tax, or legal advice by through way of this show. But I want to talk a little bit about where you feel like points and miles fits in as a tool for wealth building and within the personal finance world. What's been kind of your scope, your belief in that space?
Yeah, I love this question because I think points and miles is so much more than just incredible travel experiences. And like I mentioned, I kind of found award travel through personal finance education. And I remember when I was learning, you know, initially about personal finance, I feel like there's a lot of really kind of accepted ideas in the personal finance world. You know, I was reading about things like if you do have, you know, disposable income and you can invest in a retirement account or you can invest in, you know, a taxable, you know, brokerage account, this is how you can use your money as an asset, right? You can leverage your money to grow for you, to compound over time, right? And this is the reason why if you do have disposable income, it can make more sense to put that money in some sort of vehicle where it can compound versus just keeping money in a bag in your closet, right? Or just keeping your money in a savings account or a local credit union. And all of those concepts made sense to me. But I remember when I started learning about points and miles and thinking again, looking at kind of the conversations going on in my medical practice, looking at my own personal expenses, I remember looking at my expenses and saying, wait a minute, why is no one talking about how expenses can also be assets, right? We all talk about just, this is just what we have to spend, right? Or even worse, you know, a lot of folks are shamed for how they spend money or, you know, debt they have, if it's student loans, if it's something else, a mortgage, whatever. And I remember looking at my expenses and saying, wait a minute, yes, there is absolutely a way that you want to be responsible and thoughtful and deliberate about using points earning credit cards. I'm sure you've educated folks on that. And also, my expenses can work for me, just like my money can work for me, right? Like my expenses can be leveraged into thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of points. And I can do real things with those points that have monetary value. And so for me, I think because I found award travel through personal finance, it all just linked together to me in a really, really obvious way that these are just two pieces of the puzzle, right? How can we use our expenses to work as hard for us as we're very comfortable talking about using, you know, our money as an asset? And so that was one thing that just always, always stuck with me, especially again, as I was looking around at my community, you know, physicians and small business owners. When my husband started his practice, and maybe you had this experience as a business owner as well, you know, a lot of business owners know it takes money to run a business, right? And oftentimes what you're spending in expenses can dwarf what you're actually, you know, being paid as income from a business. And so, you know, I think there's kind of this misconception about, oh, why would certain people even need points or miles, right? Whereas I always saw, no. If you have any expenses, especially if you have a lot of expenses, you can use points and miles. And so for me, it was all part of this big complementary picture.
And I think you use a great word when you talk about leverage, right? Because in the world of financial planning, I look at money different, but I see the opportunity for leverage.
Yes.
And by leverage, I mean the opportunity to see where does it make the most sense to use the resources and assets that you have. And for example, leverage is, you could think of borrowing on home equity to invest in investment property, right? You can, the leverage is just saying, how can I use a resource and turn that resource into something more, right? And there's risk with that because also you can borrow on home equity and take a vacation with that, right? That's maybe not the smartest thing to do, but the same thing when it comes to points and miles. So I've sat down with many clients where we're talking through their financial plan, their retirement plan, whatever it may be, and looking at, just as you said, their expenses, their lifestyle. Hey, you're spending all of this money. Not that it's a bad thing. And you're right. Sometimes we're led to be shamed on wow, you took a $20,000 vacation? Well, yes, I also saved $200,000 last year. I could take a $20,000 vacation, but we don't have that concept, or we're not taught that concept of balance. And so my point to this is when working with clients, oftentimes we'll talk through what their goals are, their dreams, their vision. And a lot of times, and this is very common, most people, the wealth they build, they never use, right? They save and save and save, but they never took the trip. They never did the thing. And then they get much older when they're finally not working and they're like, hey, we can travel now, but the health might not allow for them to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Why not do that now, but be balanced with it? So why not have the opportunity to use your points or to create points and then use those points to go on these experiences and these trips that you may have never done or not done in this phase of your life, to the point that you said very early on in the show, right? Points and miles allows us to do things that we probably never would have thought we could have done otherwise.
Yeah. And I think this is such an amazing point, and something that I think, again, is so great about this hobby is that it is not one size fits all. You know, I think there are so many different people that can benefit from points and miles in so many different ways. And speaking to your most recent point, I think that was one of the things that I really, really saw as true. Just again, for me personally, was that I had, again, once I finally got out of all my training, I finally had some disposable income. So theoretically, could I have taken that disposable income and entirely used it to travel? Like, yeah, that was real money that was there. And also, I have other and additional financial goals and priorities, right? And I think for me, points is such a beautiful thing because it allows me, and I'll be very clear, you know, the value I get out of my points now, if I had no points, I would not be spending the equivalent cash on travel. But because I do have points and I can expand the amount of budget I have for my travel. My points have expanded my travel budget, like you said, by about 10 times. What that means is great. And I can also meet all my other financial goals, right? I'm not choosing to use all of my disposable income on travel. Great that points are there to do that. So I can use that disposable income. I can contribute to 529 accounts for my kids, right? I can, if I want to, pay down some of my mortgage or do whatever else I want with it. And so to me, it's really an expansion of financial choices. And the fact that, as we know, you know, points can be amazingly valuable for things like premium cabin airline travel. That's also just incredibly fun. I think that's just like the bonus on top of everything.
It really is, because the way I look at it is, I mean, let's look at maybe a couple that are looking to go on their honeymoon, and they've set aside a budget of 10 grand for this honeymoon experience, which is a really reasonable budget for a trip for a couple, especially for a honeymoon, 7-10 days, whatever it may be. Imagine what happens when you compress the expense of the travel so that your hotel, if your hotel stay, your business class flights, and all of that is, let's say, instead of making up 7K, 7-8 thousand, like it typically would, only makes up $1,000. What could you do on that trip with the other 9 now?
Right.
Maybe you have a food experience that is unbelievable. Maybe you rent a Lamborghini for a day, right? Maybe you do something that's still ridiculous with the money, but you have this greater opportunity. And I think that's where points and miles can come in. And at the same time, from a standpoint of, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Taryn and myself had somewhere in the realm of, I don't know, $120,000, $130,000, $140,000 worth of travel last year. I would not have stroked a check for $130,000 worth of travel last year, right? And I'm sure it's similar with you, right? I know you have over 6 figures of travel annually yourself, plus with a much larger family as well. So it's just the opportunity, I think, to create balance in a much different way.
Absolutely. Agree with you 100%.
Now, my question for you, though, Devin, in the space of wealth building, personal finance, and points, what are some of the common mistakes that you see people make or they could be making in the same space?
Yeah, I think these mistakes are actually common to basically everybody who goes through this journey. And I think especially what I saw, again, looking around at my peers, my colleagues, I think the biggest mistake is just not doing points and miles to begin with if you're someone who loves travel. You know, I think that's sort of the context that is a given here. If you have no interest in travel, I'm not sure how you would have landed on this podcast, but you know, maybe points and miles aren't the best for you. But assuming, you know, you love to travel, again, just not truly understanding the power of points and miles. And so not ever doing it, I think is a huge mistake. And I think as educators, that's one of the best parts of our jobs, is just opening people's eyes to, hey, did you even know this is actually a real thing? This is possible for you. But then once people kind of get their foot in the door and they understand the concept and they're like, okay, I'm on board with this, I think really the biggest mistakes from there come down to not understanding like the true opportunity of points and miles in terms of under earning points for the amount of money they're spending and also overspending points when they do go to redeem them. And I think these are two kind of mistakes that it's a rite of passage. All of us do this, you know, to a certain extent for a certain period of time. So it's not like you can skip over that. But I think moving through those mistakes where you start learning, wow, there's actually a lot of strategies so that you can earn a lot more than 1 point for, you know, every dollar you spend on a lot of expenses. And then on the redemption side, you know, when you finally break free of using your points through your credit card travel portal and you start to really understand, wow, there are some other strategies, some other opportunities for really, really greatly increasing the value that you get from your points. And I think that is all part of the very natural learning curve of this hobby for everyone who gets involved in it.
And how do you advise people go about or go down this path without running the risk of overspending? Right? Because very easily when you get into this game, and you know, we talked a little bit about this when I was on your podcast, right? There are some things that we do when we play this game that are completely nonsensical, but we do it anyway, right? We maybe do a mattress run to get status or different things like that. So there's things that when you're at a high level in this game, of course, we can do, but especially for that person that's starting out, how do you help them to not overspend because they're trying to do too much too quickly?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, right? And I think my baseline, I mean, the way I approach this, the way that I try to educate folks is that this is not about spending more money. It's not about buying things you don't want, buying things you don't need. And so I think the baseline is let's look at how to take what you're already spending to run your life or run your business if you happen to be a business owner. And that's what we have to work with. So I think just putting those guardrails in place where it's how can we optimize what we're already doing, but be very explicit about it and say, hey, you know yourself best, right? If you're the type of person who once you get into like a gamified situation or a situation where you can be competitive with yourself, if you know your tendency would be to buy things that you don't want just because it's got a great, you know, points payout, maybe decide not to do this yet, or maybe put more guardrails in place for yourself, you know, or know what are the actual limits that I'm going to go up to. You know, if I am going to quote spend money, you know, in order to mattress run, you know, to earn status or to earn points, what are my criteria for that, right? Like, do I have really good criteria for when this is actually worth it so that I can know if the math doesn't math, I'm not going to do this. And so part of it is really kind of anchoring yourself in, I'm going to use my existing expenses and that's what I'm going to focus on. And also then as you do get a little bit more advanced, you see some of these more strategic moves you can make, having some very specific rules for yourself about this is how I've decided this is worth it for me. And if it doesn't meet these criteria, then I'm going to say no to this points earning opportunity.
And so, Devin, I know you're not the financial advisor here, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit because I know you've coached and worked with so many people specifically in this space. When someone does come to you, they've listened to the podcast, they've joined your Facebook group, they're so fired up to be in this world, and they're excited to work with you one-on-one, the great Devin Gimel in points and miles. But you find out that they have a fair amount of consumer debt. What do you tell them?
Yeah, you know, I'm a very conservative person financially in terms of financial risk, financial responsibility. And what I tell everybody that I work with, whether it's on a large scale, just, you know, on my podcast where it may just be a listener versus if someone does reach out to me one-on-one or does hire me, you know, to do consulting work with them one-on-one, I always make sure people understand this is the risk, right? We always have that conversation about why I don't personally think it's a good idea. And I don't personally advise anybody to get any rewards cards or to put spend on a rewards card if you are not yet in a financial position where you can pay off all of your statements in full every single month. And again, we talk about it from a math perspective. I don't think this has anything to do with morality. I don't think this has anything to do with being a good person or a bad person, right? I think this is all just about math and numbers. But so people can understand, oh, if I'm carrying consumer debt, or if I'm not yet in a position where I can pay off all of my credit card statements in full every month, the math doesn't math. And so there is no point to doing this. You're just going to be hurting yourself in the long run. And in that situation, I tell people, hey, education is free, right? Just because you're not yet in that position, use this as a time to learn, right? As you are getting your financial legs underneath you, fine. Still learn about points and miles so that when you do hit that point where you're ready and able, you know, to pay off all your statements in full, now you know exactly what you're going to do. You know, you spent a couple of months learning about different rewards cards, different points ecosystems. There's no pressure on you, right, to have achieved anything at any certain time, but there will come that time when you are ready to go and you're going to be able to hit the ground running at that point.
Absolutely love that. I think that was fantastic advice and goes back to, I think, the core belief that we have in this world in general. I know both you and I share, I absolutely have as a financial advisor, is fiscal responsibility. That's what it has to come down to. So, and I say that because I know of people that listen to the show and they're excited, they want to do it, they're ready to travel. It's okay if you're not ready yet, but as you said, education is free, and being able to have the roadmap laid out so you can do it right from the get-go, right? Understanding the 524 rules and all the nuances in this game that some people, they just jump into and kind of shoot themselves in the foot because they might have moved a little too fast too soon. You know, the education piece can help you avoid that. So I absolutely love that feedback.
Yeah, amazing.
So Devin, I know you're an expert in very niche ways and reasons to buy points for flights. And you alluded to this a little bit when it comes to Lufthansa, which we flew Lufthansa business class from Frankfurt to Atlanta, had a fantastic experience. I still haven't gotten that first class, you know, different terminal escort.
You will get there.
I know. I need to find the trip we're going to do that because I want to get the G-Wagon pickup and all the things that they do.
It's amazing. Except if you're traveling with a family, they'll put you in a minivan. So just be aware.
Duly noted. I think since we definitely subscribe to the D-Quad car, I don't think we'll have to worry about that, but I appreciate the heads up.
I just want to prepare you. You get a minivan with a booster seat inside. It's a little different than like the Porsche it's parked next to.
So Devin, I'm curious of the what and the why. So why Lufthansa specifically when they don't have the transfer partners, and how do you find these opportunities? You know, what are the things you're looking for to say, okay, I'm going to pull the trigger and buy these miles? Because most of the time we're talking about earning miles through card signups or everyday spend. We rarely hear about the buying, and the buying can make a lot of sense, but I know the math has to math. So I'm wondering, how does that work out?
Yeah. And you know, I think that there are very, very specific scenarios where this can be considered. And one of the things I think it's so great for us to talk about is the fact that just because some of us may have some approaches and points and miles, that doesn't mean it's going to be right for everybody. So I think anytime you hear about something that you're kind of surprised by, or you think, oh my gosh, this sounds amazing, always kind of look at that through the lens of, does this actually make sense for me? And, you know, when I think about points and miles, I know there are a lot of folks who use in points and miles to get their travel for free or nearly for free, right? Because they don't yet have an actual, you know, disposable income budget to allocate towards travel. I think that is beautiful, right? So I'm in a little bit of a different scenario where I have a certain amount of money that I do allocate towards my travel budget every single year. And so when I'm thinking about other opportunities for points and miles, one of the things when I think about purchasing points and miles is essentially, can I use my existing travel budget, which could be set aside for me and my family to travel in economy? Can I use that to purchase points that then for the same price or less than the price of traveling in economy, I now actually have access, you know, to business or first class flights? So that's kind of one of the mindsets I have around purchasing points, but I think it can make sense in a couple scenarios. So number one, I've kind of alluded to this, that you already have money that you are happy to allocate towards that actual purchase, because this is not earning points, again, for your grocery spend or for your rent. You are spending money in this scenario to buy points. And so first of all, you need to have that allocated and be comfortable, you know, with that kind of scenario, but then understanding the opportunity. And some of the opportunity is that I think some folks may be familiar with buying or topping off, you know, their frequent flyer account with points and miles, where maybe they're trying to book an award and they're 2,000 miles short. So you go and you buy, just the difference. I think that can be a great approach. What I'm talking about is outright buying miles and points, like a huge, huge block of miles and points, and then using that for your travel. And the reason this can make sense for some folks is there are certain airlines that are not transfer partners of any of the transferable currencies. So I don't care if you have 8 million Amex points, you can't transfer them to Lufthansa. You can't transfer them to Swiss. You are out of luck, right? And so there are some of these more niche airline programs that the only way you can accrue a lot of points in them, if you don't have a lot of paid cash flights for booked through that airline, is to either get a co-branded credit card and put a ton of spend on it, because it's most likely going to be earning 1 point for every dollar you spend, or just going out and buying a chunk of points and miles. And so this can make sense to give you access to a program you otherwise don't have access to. And the reason that matters is because when you think about the landscape of points and miles, you know, how many of us who have any transferable points currency could go out or are fighting for the same business class flight on Air France? You know, like the benefit of access is, it's amazing. So many of us then can potentially book those flights. If there is a downside, you know, to airline transfer partners that are transfer partners of 4 or 5 transferable points currencies, is that we're all kind of looking at the same award space. And again, depending on what your travel preferences and needs are, that can make finding award space very, very challenging. So you think about a program like Lufthansa that's not easily accessible from transferable points currencies, and that also at the same time has tons and tons of award space, but that they keep for their own program. So you can sometimes find Lufthansa or Swiss award flights through Star Alliance partners, you know, like Aeroplan or Avianca or United, but I can guarantee you that you are never going to find, you know, 6 business class awards on 4 flights a day on every single route that you're looking at, unless you actually have miles within that specific program. And that's true for Lufthansa. And so, especially for me, when I am thinking about, you know, potentially having a family of 4 travel, there's not as many options available to us where I know that we're going to have a high likelihood of being able to find those flights. And so I love having Lufthansa Miles and More as my, like, my backup. You know, if Air France is really dry on award space, or, you know, some of these other airlines that sometimes you can get lucky with, I know I can rely on Lufthansa, and they have a great route network. You know, they obviously fly from the States to their hubs in Europe, but then even beyond, you can go so many different places with them. But the key really in deciding this is understanding the math, understanding what am I actually going to have to pay for how many points, and do I feel comfortable and confident enough with how I'm going to use those points that the value of travel I'm going to book with my purchase points at least matches, but ideally far outweighs the cost of purchasing the points themselves. And so I think that is really the key, is learning how to run through those calculations so that you can make a confident decision.
That's perfect. So outside of Lufthansa, is there any other airlines you found that you've focused on kind of buying those miles? Completely understand, right? Because Lufthansa also, you know, they're best known for, if you want to fly tomorrow, you can find their award availability or within the next 3 days. But if you're looking for something 2 weeks out from now, you're not going to find it unless your miles are there, like you said.
Right.
Have you found any other sweet spots out there by chance?
Yeah, you know, so in terms of purchasing miles, I'll give you 2 other airlines that I actually do purchase miles in, because they're very different use case scenarios. I have purchased miles through Aeroplan before, which I think might surprise people, only because Aeroplan is a transfer partner of so many different transferable points currencies. So it's not that Aeroplan miles are inaccessible otherwise, the way that Lufthansa's miles are, but that I think they are just so useful. So there have been times when Aeroplan has had like 100%, you know, bonuses or point sales where you can get points at such a low cost. And again, this really requires that you have a high level of confidence, not only that you're going to use those miles, but that you know the way that you want to use them is going to be very, very high value. And so the last time I purchased Aeroplan miles was actually a few years ago. And this was back when there was still really, really great partner award availability on Emirates and Etihad. So I had actually used Aeroplan points, Aeroplan miles, to book Game Changer Emirates first class flight from Dubai to Brussels. And I also had booked on the same trip the Etihad first class apartment from London to Abu Dhabi. And so again, you know, many people are going to have access to Aeroplan miles, but if you are looking at, you know, some of those more expensive mileage redemptions that still can be a great value, you're essentially getting premium cabin flights on sale. So that's one. And then the other one is a little more of a niche program. It's not as user-friendly as, again, our Air France's or, you know, our Air Canada Aeroplans. And that's EVA. And that's the airline that's based, one of the airlines that's based in Taiwan. They have an amazing product. When they release business class space to partners, they tend to release one business class award flight on most of their routes, which, again, if you travel solo, great. If you aren't traveling solo, that's not as usable. And EVA is really, really interesting where they're a transfer partner of Citi and Capital One, although with Capital One, it's not a one-to-one transfer ratio. Citi right now is the only ecosystem, the only points currency where you can transfer one-to-one to EVA. But EVA has great award availability, again, within their own program, and they allow you to purchase miles. You can only use up to 50% purchased miles to book an award trip. So you do need to have either Citi points or Capital One points you can transfer to EVA, but it can be a really great way. Like, I have Citi points, but it's harder for me to earn Citi points than it is Chase or Amex. You know, even with the Citi Double Cash Card and the Citi Premier Strata Card, there's no great shopping portal. There's not a lot of cards that you can sign up for huge, you know, welcome bonuses. You've really got to put spend, you know, on your Citi cards to earn points. And so it's hard for me personally to get hundreds of thousands, you know, of Citi points. And so it can make sense for me, especially if I'm trying to book multiple business class awards, where I can transfer in a bunch of my Citi points, but then I can also supplement that with purchased miles. And so there are these certain use case scenarios, again, where I think it can make a lot of sense.
Devin, that was absolutely fantastic. I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Especially when you find the bonuses, those are the great opportunities to do so. And you do need to have a degree of understanding and sophistication when it comes to the points and miles world and buying points. Because if you're still struggling, I would wager if you're still struggling to find the point flight in general, that's not 500,000 per, you know, points per person, and you're struggling to find those more sweet spots where you're only paying, you know, 70 or 80,000 per person for someone in business class. If we haven't gotten there yet, you could really honestly do some damage, but not really accomplish what you're wanting to if you buy points and don't know how to find the good redemption. Because just because you buy the points doesn't necessarily mean you're going to find the 60, 70, 80K flight. You might still be seeing the 500K per person flight if you don't know about flexibility and other things with your searches. So I really love how you said that it still takes a little bit of skill set to understand both the timing of buying and the skill of redeeming as well.
Yeah, I do not recommend, if you consider yourself to be a beginner in this hobby, I don't recommend purchasing points as one of those first line strategies. Once you've been in this for a little while, and it's not even a certain amount of time, but I think everyone kind of has that sense of, oh, wow, I'm getting more comfortable. I'm getting more confident. You know, I know how to run award searches. I feel a little bit more used to navigating these different frequent flyer program websites or airline websites. And I have a good sense of, yeah, what a decent deal is versus just like a terrible, terrible deal on an award flight. When you kind of get to that more intermediate level, then I think it's more appropriate to consider something like purchasing miles. But, you know, for the right person, it can be powerful. But again, it's not right for everybody. And I don't think it's right for most beginners.
Devin, this has been absolutely fantastic today. A great dialogue, great discussion. I've already mentioned your podcast, but where can the listeners follow you? Where can they find you? You know, what's the best way for them to follow the Devin Gimbel experience?
You know, I actually think the podcast is probably the easiest place to follow me. You know, I also have a website. It's called pointmetofirstclass.com. So there's a little more information about just me, my points philosophy, you know, how people can work with me posted there. I wish that I was of the generation where Instagram made sense to my brain. I'm technically on Instagram. You can find me at pointme2 and then the underscore symbol first class. Maybe I'll try to figure out how to actually post on that sometime this year. But in terms of actual information that I put out regularly, I think my podcast is the absolute best place to go.
No worries. A couple clips from this episode we'll collaborate on. So those will be your couple posts for the year.
That's all I need.
That's awesome, Devin. This was absolutely fantastic. Before we go, there's two last questions I have for you. The first one, I'm going to make this slightly more challenging, is I always love asking who else should we have on the show. However, I'm going to ask you to mention someone that was not at the Travel More conference, because of course we saw a bunch of people there. So who else should we have on the shore that was not there?
You know, I have two. I actually had two prepared and none of them were at Travel More. So this will be great. So one is points and miles related and one's actually more personal finance related, because obviously I know that's your background. I think there's great conversations that you all could have. So my first recommendation are Sam and Jenna. They're on Instagram at Travelers in Law. So they're two lawyers and they talk about earning, you know, points and miles for travel and also from the lens, you know, of folks who are in law. So I just really enjoy kind of, you know, watching them and what they're putting out. And then the other people who I think would be great for you to have on the show, their names are Jess and Brandon, and they actually have a podcast. It's called the Sugar Daddy Podcast, and it's all about financial education for millennials. And I think I'm supposed to be a millennial. I don't relate to that at all because I grew up pre-internet, you know, I know what cassette tapes are. I had, you know, cassettes in my car until about 5 years ago. So I don't consider myself a millennial, but I think that, you know, the personal finance kind of conversations and education that they put out there, Brandon, the husband of the couple, I believe he's also a certified financial planner. They're just really knowledgeable, enthusiastic, incredible people. So they're also, like I said, at the Sugar Daddy Podcast. And I think those are both really, really interesting folks that you could have conversations with.
Awesome, Devin. I appreciate the shout outs and the connections. We'll try to work to get them on the show in the future. Any last thoughts before we wrap this one up?
You know, I think what it comes down to for me is anyone who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, is a lover of travel and points and miles. And I think just given who your audience is, my audience, you know, you may have folks who kind of tend to identify as, you know, overachievers who can have high expectations of themselves and what they do with their points and miles. And I really just want to reiterate, you know, there's no wrong way to do points or miles. Like, there's no wrong way to create a credit card portfolio. It doesn't have to look exactly like, you know, somebody else's. The way that you travel, how you derive, you know, pleasure from using your points, it doesn't have to look the way that somebody else does, especially for people who are great at Instagram. They're posting these amazing things on Instagram. You know, if you're getting value from your points and miles and you're having travel and experiences that matter to you, then I think that you're winning at this. So please just remember that there's no wrong way to do points and miles if it's adding value to your life.
Devin, couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And as I expected, you are an absolute treasure trove of knowledge. And it was really fun getting a chance to put my financial advisor hat on for a little bit as well. Don't often get a chance to do that on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so amazing. And I just really value and appreciate your time and the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For the listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode today, please, as always, be sure to follow us on all the social media channels, sign up for our newsletter, our private Facebook group, all those different things. Take a listen. Devin's podcast, Point Me to First Class, is in itself first class. I think you'll get a lot of good hits out of that as well. And as always, don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell your friends, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.